Paul's problem child. I think we all remember that Paul was a dynamic personality. There was nothing wishy-washy about Paul. His yea was yea, his nay was nay. And he made a lot of friends down the pathway. He also made a lot of enemies. I mean, there were people that were willing to kill Paul. That's the kind of passions he stirred up. And when you think of the different churches that he dealt with, in some cases founded, in other cases really supported, most of the relationships were good. Philippians, oh, he loved the Philippians. We know that from the first chapter. The Galatians, he had a good relationship with. The Romans, he had never been to when he wrote his letter, but he still loved them. He was looking forward to that visit. Ephesians, he spent a lot of time there. The Colossians, when he wrote that letter, he had not yet visited them, but his good friend and student Epaphroditus had gone there, founded that church, so Paul felt close to them. Then we get into some of his personal letters. We know that he loved Philemon. Philemon was a good friend of his. And then, of course, there's Timothy and Titus. They were his sons. And so we know that he basically, to the people that he wrote his letters, he had wonderful, wonderful relationships. But in some respects, he had one problem child. And that was Corinth. He spent a lot of time with this, problem. I think a problem child requires a lot of time. And as I looked at the letters to him, 30% of what Paul wrote was to the Corinthians. In my old King James Bible, Paul's writings cover 78 pages, and 23 out of the 78, hence the 30%, were devoted to Corinth. There's 29 chapters, and I totaled the number of verses in each of the chapters. It's almost 700 verses just to Corinth. And as we approach this study this morning, my goal is, and if I hadn't said it already, there's nothing dogmatic about this. These are all options. I'm going to give you one view of Corinthians, and I hope it stirs you up. I want to fan the flame in your passion for the New Testament and the Scriptures. But in order to understand the 700, I'm going to try to divide it into sections so that it's maybe more digestible. Paul visited Corinth at least three times. He wrote to them, pay attention here, he wrote to them four letters. Ooh, okay, we'll talk about that. Maybe he wrote four letters, okay? It's an option. And he lived there with them for 18 months. So the first division that we make into sections is we have 1 Corinthians and 2 Corinthians. That's pretty basic. And we know that in our Bibles, 1 Corinthians is divided into 16 chapters, and 2 Corinthians is divided into 13 chapters. Now there's a very interesting statement in 1 Corinthians, happens to be in the 5th chapter. And Paul here says, in my first letter. Now, what's that tell you? If I sent you an email and you opened the email and I went on and then I said, in my first email, you would say what? Uh-oh. There was an email before this one and I didn't get it or whatever. So we're led to believe that because of this statement in the 5th chapter, that there is some kind of writing before what we know as 1 Corinthians. Now, when Paul references this in the 5th chapter, He says, I told you about some immoral people. I told you about some immorality going on. Now, what's interesting is that there is a section in 2 Corinthians, in the 6th chapter, that talks about immorality. That's not what's unusual. What's unusual is the sequence of that chapter. And Paul is talking about his heart and their heart. He said, we opened our hearts to you. Please open your hearts. Then all of a sudden, there's this diversion into sexual immorality. And then he comes back to the heart again. It's almost as if those six verses don't follow in that sequence at all. Paul's talking about heart, 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 heart. What's this fragment doing in there? So some Bible students and students of the Bible have suggested that because of the statements about immorality in the 5th verse, and then later on this segment about immorality, that's the fragment that Paul first wrote, and that's the fragment that belongs before 1 Corinthians. Okay. You know, it's not a big deal, but the more we understand the structure, the more we can pin in our doctrines and divisions like that. Okay, so let's say we put part of that fragment up front, before 1 Corinthians. The second interesting thing that happens is that when you look at 2 Corinthians, there's two totally different tone, totally two different personalities. It's like there's two different Pauls. The very end, chapters 10 through 13, this is a very stern, upset, almost angry Paul. He says things like, you've not been behaving properly. He says, I'm coming to take care of some of the problems. He says, he uses the word punish. He says, I will not be put to shame. He's quite defensive. And as you read this 10 through 13, you can feel his anger. You can feel his upset. And he says, I will not spare anyone. It's not a very nice ending to this, all these writings on to the Corinthians. Now, if you look at the other section, chapters 1 through 9, it's a totally different feeling. Paul is nice here. He's happy. He's complimenting them. And here's what he says. Remember that in that stern section, he says, I'm coming. I'm coming, and there's going to be trouble. Okay, now he says in this other section, I'm so sorry I didn't come. And he says, but I'm glad that you solved the problem. He says, I love you. My heart is open to you. We mentioned that when we were talking about the 6th chapter. He says, open your heart to me. This has a really nice ending. So, the suggestion here is that those two sections maybe should be switched. If we want to keep it a simple story and not add in a lot of extra visits and extra messages and extra letters, it would make sense that the scolding came first, the threat came first, and then the apology, the makeup, came second. So we might just switch those. So this is a possible structure that we can attack. In our minds, we've already divided it up now into four sections. We don't have that 700 verse albatross to tackle. We can divide it into sections. Okay, so here we go. Let's look at that stern section with just a little bit more detail. Let's look at those chapters. And you know that I'm a fan of studying by chapters first. That if we study by chapters and we get the summaries of the chapters, that's how we can memorize and get to the detail. So in the second verse of the 10th chapter, this again, remember, this is the stern section. Paul says in the second verse, 10:2, that he's going to act with great boldness against some of the troublemakers. And they happen to be immoral people, he says. In the 11th chapter, the summary verse might be verse 13. And he's talking about some of his competition. Some people were giving trouble, some other teachers. And he says, these men are not real apostles. This is that flavor of Paul that's like, it's almost like a shock. This is Paul talking. And then in the 12th chapter, he says something different in the 11th verse. He says, I'm acting like a fool. He's almost embarrassed to talk this way. He says, I'm acting like a fool. But then he says, but you made me do it. Defensive. And then finally in the 13th chapter, verse 5 might be a key verse where he says, examine yourselves and try to correct what's been going on. And that could be the end of that stern letter. Now the apology letter, the other part of 2 Corinthians, the whole first two chapters are pretty much Paul apologizing for the other letter. And he explains it. He gives reasons. Maybe they're excuses. And then he comes to the third chapter. And to me, the key here is in the first verse. And he talks about letters of commendation. Again, keep in mind that Paul's got this competition going all the time. There's always another teacher there. There's always a Judaizer. There's always somebody from the Gnostic group trying to counteract Paul's gospel. So apparently these men were bringing up letters of commendation. So Paul here, after he apologizes, he says in the third chapter, maybe you're asking me about a letter of commendation. But he says, do you know what? I have something better than a letter of commendation. What I have is you. He says that to the Corinthians. He said, your life, you're changing from your heathenism. See, these were mostly Gentiles. When Paul went to Corinth the first time, where's the first place he goes? He goes to the synagogue. What happened there? After a very short order, they kicked him out. They almost killed Sosthenes, I can't even pronounce his name. But they almost killed him. He was the leader of the synagogue. Paul left the Jews and went to the Gentiles. I think most of the people to whom he's talking, Gentiles, they're like us. This is not a letter to the Jews. So he looks at these people who have changed from idolatry, immorality, and he says, you are my letter of commendation because of your changed life. It's pretty much a compliment to these brethren there as they were struggling. And Paul says, you know what this reminds me of? He says, when God talks to people, they get a glow on their face. And he says, remember the story of Moses. Now, did you ever wonder why the story of Moses is in the third chapter of 2 Corinthians? Okay, this is the reason. Paul is saying, everybody God talks to gets a glow on their face. And we ask ourselves, we have that glow? Do you have that glow? When you go to the refinery, when you go to the lab, when you go to the shop, when you go anywhere, do people see that glow that you've been up on the mountain like Moses? And Paul is telling the Corinthians, you know, you've got the glow. We're looking for a storyline here in 2 Corinthians that we can remember this storyline. So we got the apology. He says, I don't need a letter of commendation to you. You are my letter. You have God's glory written all over you. But, fourth chapter, stay humble. I think it's this maybe around the seventh verse. He says, you know, we have a treasure, but what do we have it in? Pots. Earthen pots. You know, part of this approach is that's a scripture we quote a lot, isn't it? Oh, we have this treasure in earthen pots. But do we remember the context? On Saturday, Brother David Christensen quoted 2 Corinthians 11. Did it snap into your mind the whole context of what's in 2 Corinthians 11? Or are we just pulling out a scripture here? After that, Jonathan quoted from 1 Corinthians 9. Did the whole picture of what's in 1 Corinthians 9 come before your mind as he said that? Or was it just an isolated scripture? I'm suggesting that in order to really be a Bible student, we've got to have the picture. Every time a scripture comes up, we've got to say, yes, I know. Paul is reminding the Corinthians to stay humble, even though in the preceding chapter he told them that they have the glory written all over their face. That's our goal, to get that familiar, to get that good with the scriptures. He says, now let me tell you, don't forget what that glory of God is all about. He says in the fifth chapter, the purpose of God is to what? Reconcile himself to everyone. That's God's objective. Those are the kind of notes that I lost in my computer. So I forget the verse. It's well on into the chapter, into the fifth chapter. And he says, you have been given the job. What's your job? He says, now that you have the glory, you are a minister of reconciliation. So you're an ambassador. You're a carrier of this good news. So we see the storyline unfolding. He said, don't forget that that this whole thing is by grace. This is a gift. I think it's in the first verse of chapter 6. And later on he says, because you have this grace, it's a tremendous gift. Persevere. And then that section that we alluded to earlier, he's telling them that he loves them. And he says, we've opened our hearts to you. Open your hearts to us. See, Paul offended them. In that stern section of 10 through 13, he said things he was sorry for later. And so he apologizes here. It's hard to apologize. It's hard to go to somebody. Sometimes we try to do it by our behavior, that we be nice to them. But here he says, open your hearts to us. And then, something that Paul does a lot in his letters, he always ends it with a little bit of a marketing push for getting some donations for the brethren back in Judea. So that's 8 and 9. So there's the storyline of 2 Corinthians. Now let's go to 1 Corinthians. 16 chapters. I'm going to summarize the 16 chapters. The first four are about sectarianism. Big problem in Corinth. I am of Paul. I am of Apollos. I am of Cephas. I am of Christ. We have that problem today. Different labels. We'll talk hopefully more about it. Fifth chapter is that terrible story about the adultery. The immorality. You know, all through Corinthians, they had a problem with immorality. Remember that first pre-letter? That was about immorality. And incidentally, those verses in that pre-letter extracted from 2 Corinthians 6, that's the section that says, do not be yoked with an unbeliever. Remember that? That's the one we quote to our young people all the time. That comes from 2 Corinthians 6:14, and that's the one that comes before 1 Corinthians. So the immorality was in the pre-letter, it was in the main letter of first, it was in the second letter. It's through the whole thing. It was a terrible problem in Corinth. They were Gentiles. They came from this heathen culture. They had different standards. They had no heritage of the Judaic laws and things like that. So this is what Paul, this is why they were a problem. The sixth chapter is about taking your brethren to court. He said, don't do that. And also in the second half of the sixth chapter, there's more problems with the immorality, sexual immorality. Seventh is about marriage. And then there's idols and don't eat meat. You're going to stumble your brethren. The ninth chapter, Paul deals with more accusations. He's always being accused of not being a real apostle. And this is a defensive chapter nine. Chapter 10, he's back to idols again, and this time he uses the Israel experience of when they built the calf and Moses and that. That's the 10th chapter. The 11th chapter, he talks about women's role in the church. And then the second half of that chapter, he talks about the memorial supper. And he's actually talking about decorum in the church. They were coming to the memorial, which apparently they were doing something every week. It's not one of the sections we understand terribly well, those of us who do the annual memorial. But apparently they were doing something every week, and some of them were coming to the meeting actually inebriated. So Paul's dealing with decorum in the church. The 12th chapter has to do with gifts. And he says, you know, you all have different gifts. And we have different, when there's different gifts amongst you, what's it like? It's like a body. The ears, the eyes. That's where that illustration comes in 1 Corinthians 12. You all know what chapter 13 is about. There's two chapters here in 1 Corinthians that, boy, do we know well. 13 and 15, right? So it's stuck in between 13 and 15 is 14, and that's about tongues, speaking in tongues. And then there's the resurrection chapter. And guess what Paul ends with again in 1 Corinthians? His favorite ending. Donate some money for the brethren. It's like he says, you know, there's a box on that back table there. Lunch, you know, don't forget that you ate here. So make your checks out to Alberta Bible students. Okay, let's see what's next. So we come to, I'm going to take a little side here. I'll just talk for 2 minutes about our memories. It's hard to remember. 700 verses? I don't know how you could remember all 700 verses. 29 chapters? Maybe we have a chance to remember what the 29 chapters are. Now, when I was in school, we all had to learn a lot of things. We had to learn thousands of things. In my particular schooling, we had to learn the bones of the body. We had to learn the nerves, the muscles. Every muscle had an insertion and an origin. I don't know. It seemed like there were a million things that we had to learn. We got tested on them. We got drilled on them. And one of the things that they tried to do was they tried to help us with memory aids. They'd say, well, the cranial bones, there's eight of them, and if you memorize this little sentence, the first letter of all those sentences, that's the order of the cranial bones. And they tried to teach us mnemonics so that we could tie into things. So our little study group, our class, was going through Corinthians sometime back, about a year or so. And we kind of made this list of the, on the left here, we see the highlights of the chapters. And we tried to summarize it. And we said, okay, these were the main points of 1 Corinthians. A sectarian, that was a big thing. There was an adulterer. They had legal issues. He talks about marriage, stumbling, worship, resurrection, and donations. Is there some way we could remember that? So we did a few things. We changed legal to legally. and we changed marriage to marries, as in a verb. And then we changed stumbling to stumbled, and worship to worshiper. And then we finally changed resurrection to resurrecting. And guess what? And this is what was for our benefit. But we had a sentence. We said, sectarian adulterer legally marries a stumbled worshiper. And that resurrects donations. Now, corny? Yeah. But you know what? From that point on, our study group can tell you the outline of 1 Corinthians. I could never do that before until I had this mnemonic device. Okay. That's one way of doing mnemonics. And the best mnemonic is the one you make up. All right. Now, don't look at your notes, but do you remember what the 7th chapter was all about in 1 Corinthians? What? Marriage, yeah. Now, I'll tell you how I remember that one. In this life, what is it that we all have that's perfect? What's the number 7 represent? It represents, in Bible student terminology, what? Perfection. You know what? We all have the perfect marriages. That's chapter 7. Anytime I want to think about, what's the chapter in Corinthians about marriage? It's easy now. It's 7. So, I have personally, in my mind, and some of them are secret, I've come up with a word for every one of those chapters. So that when somebody says, or it comes up that there's the 11th chapter of 1 Corinthians, I know that it has to do with women, and I know that it has to do with the memorial. How do I remember the memorial? There were probably 11 disciples left after Judas left. So I just, that little tie-in, trite, contrived, maybe, but it works for my brain. If you make, I'm not going to tell you how I remember tongues, but it has something to do with forked tongues, 14 forked tongues, it's just crazy things. But I remember now what the chapters are. Okay, enough on the memory thing. I encourage you to get a working knowledge of these chapters first. Then we can get to the 700 verses. Now, in a summary sense, these are the issues that I think are in all these chapters of Corinthians. There's sectarianism, there's immorality, there's involved with worldly systems. He says, don't go to the courts. There's marriage and family relations. Decorum in the church, tongues, Christian doctrines. I've got Christian doctrines on a separate slide. So just looking at these, I said, which ones do we have problem with in the church today? Which, in the Alberta church, in the Saskatchewan church, in the Oregon church? I don't see a lot of big issues. We're not involved with worldly systems. I don't see brethren dragging other brethren to courts. That doesn't happen. We don't have the immorality issues that they had in Corinth. Once in a while, issue comes up. Maybe I'm really naive, but I don't see it as a big thing. I don't hear a lot of speaking in tongues. I heard a little Romanian at this convention, but I could get it translated in an instant. So Paul says that's okay. I do see Paul's warning about sectarianism still really relevant today. I think that we could study those first 4 chapters. How do I remember that sect? All of Paul's lessons on sect are in the first 4 chapters. Well, it's a 4-letter word, sect, S-E-C-T. That helps me remember it's the first 4 chapters. I think we could we could learn from Paul's lessons there. And idolatry, I think that idolatry is alive and well in 2010 within the Bible students. We have our idols. We have different idols. Some it's jobs, some it's money, some it's reputation. Does it stumble others? No, but maybe it gives them a pretty poor example. So think about those things. So focus on the suggestion of sectarianism and idolatry. I would say marriage and family is something we have to work on. I don't see it as a big problem, but it's a 24/7 job. And then decorum in the church. Paul was largely talking about decorum on the night of memorial. We have great decorum on the night of memorial, don't we? We come in, we're quiet, everybody takes their seat. It's a kind of almost sanctimonious. And then what happens on the next Sunday? Oh boy, it all breaks loose. The chairman is clapping his hands, trying to get people to sit down. So sometimes I wonder about our decorum, that we could have a little bit more decorum. The doctrines. I think we do really well on the doctrines. Maybe some we could emphasize more. These are the doctrines that I see in Corinthians. There was a little mention about the memorial and communion. Fantastic chapter on the resurrection. You know, I think the resurrection is one of the most distinguishing chapters or beliefs that we have. A lot of people believe in the heavenly resurrection. How many people believe in the two resurrections? I'm using that more and more. When I get a chance to witness, they say, what do you believe? I'm right up front. I say, I believe in the resurrection of the dead. Because I'm talking to people who believe in Jesus. They believe that Jesus died. So if I go there, I don't get to the heart of the matter. I go to the two resurrections. They're like, oh. So, suggestion. Gifts of the Spirit. I don't think we take advantage of that enough. I don't think we acknowledge all the gifts of the Spirit that are here. And I think we're almost a little, I don't want to say too humble, but I think we need to be more forthright, more proactive. There's all kinds of gifts here. And I think we individually have a tendency to suppress our gifts. I encourage you to study, what is your gift? And then take that and run with it. Generosity. There are some incredibly generous brethren. And then there's the other extreme where people are amassing fortunes for themselves or giving it to worldly organizations. Evidence of God's Spirit in our lives. We do fairly well. We could never do enough here. It's got to be more and more on a daily basis that we have that glow, that we've been up to the mountain, just like Moses. And then, of course, the big one is you can never have enough of love. A lot of people have said there has been no writing, including Shakespeare and everybody else, that equates to the 13th chapter of 1 Corinthians. So I encourage you, encourage myself, reread that chapter. Absorb that chapter. Take that chapter and make it you. So I think there was a special place in Paul's heart for his problem child. Isn't that true? If you're a teacher or a parent and you've got this one kid who is just he's so hard to control, but then you see him or her blossom and that's the one you end up the closest to. I'd like to close with what Paul closed pretty much at the end of the first letter. And that is, therefore, my beloved brethren, this is my prayer for you, to you, as Paul did to the Corinthians. Be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that your labor is not in vain in the Lord. Thank you.